B2, number 13B.
So I faced this idea. I did not even know their names, you know. At first to see what are their names and so on. So I began to study these little prophets. And as I began to study these prophets, I began to realize that each one has a different message of the Christ. And slowly I began to see the order of these prophets, how they have an order, as we saw it yesterday, how one led to the other, and this gave me finally the Christ matrix. Once I had the Christ matrix, and I worked with that book which I have written, with those laws which I have given them, which nobody understands what they mean, I worked for months and months, and it turned the whole world around me over. Was terrific. All that seemed to be divinely good, all that was seemed to have been humanly wonderful, just went to pieces. It was just as the ground under my feet would just fall down. And all what happened was the overturning and overturning. The Christ was bigger than my human sense of goodness. Was much bigger than my human sense of good human relationships, of good human situations, of the best and highest situation which I thought were divine, and they weren't at all. And just took the ground under my feet away. I just felt like falling right down, but I was lifted up. From that point, just everything bursted out into being. The power that lies in that book on the minor prophets, in the laws, and if one does take them and use them as one's own being, have such a terrific power that it bursts out everything. And when it did, and it did it over years, so might it was, when it did, it opened up to me, really, in the textbook, the Christ as the Christ. Then I began to see properly this chapter, Science, Theology, and Methodism. In a way, I have never dreamt of. I never dreamt of. And from that point on, naturally, the whole Christ vertical here in the textbook was becoming wider and bigger and mightier, and so I went back to London. After many, many years, I said, all right, I'm ready. And I came back and followed up from where I left and gave now these Christ chapters, Science, Theology, and Medicine, Physiology, and Footsteps of Truth. And then I couldn't go on anymore. I don't know why. Just couldn't. So I left it. And I left it, and in the meantime, something much bigger unfolded. Where it will lead, I don't know. It doesn't matter. We don't need to know. We only know it leads. Because these ideas, these structures of being are so powerful that they destroy every wrong structure within oneself and around oneself. You can't help it. Even if you want to cling to it, it doesn't work. So, let's take this science matrix quickly. You have here in your hands a chart called the structure of science and health. You see, sometimes I think it's good to know the spiritual background of how something has come to birth, because it gives one a sense that there is a higher idea at work behind it than just one's interest in science, just one's study in science. Actually, because I have an academic background, people always think, well, he is an academic, and therefore he has an academical sense, and so he gives everything he does is done from an academic standpoint. It isn't. I fight like a lion against it. I'm so I think I try to be as honest as possible in that point, that I don't let my academic background govern my study in science. And I have perhaps time afterwards to show you how I go at this, so that my academic sense does not rule the spiritual sense of the woman. So that it is always the woman within oneself that is giving birth to an idea. But then naturally, as we know from Revelation, then this idea is caught up to God and the dragon cannot swallow it anymore. So, let us just quickly go through this chart. Most of it is in my book, but I just want to pinpoint the wonderful order that is given in this textbook. See, on the top we have Word, Christ, Christianity and Science again as the four main columns. And I think we can perhaps pinpoint the first four chapters as the Word sense, namely the ordered approach to communion with God. Can you see where I am? So that the chapters Prayer, Atonement and Eucharist, Marriage and Christian Science versus Spiritualism, they have the office of taking the reader right from the first sentence and lead him step by step by step nearer, nearer, nearer to oneness with God. Therefore, the Word, as we know, is always that additional sense. The Word is divine addition. The Word is the seeking sense. It is the approaching sense, going up to God, if we want to say it like this. And so these first four chapters show, in a scientific, ordered way, how we come nearer and nearer to the point where we are one with God or Spirit. The way it is done is first through prayer. The chapter on prayer, I have said here, only the divine nature in us can commune with God. So the Word again first states, what is that which is able to approach God? See, the Word, write down, is always approach. Let us just keep that in our spiritual ear. The Word is the approach to God. Prayer first says, I give you the means how to approach God. Namely, by showing us that only the divine in us can approach God. That the begging sense in us, that the wishy-wishy full sense in us cannot approach God. That by having tears and by begging God and by being downcast and so on, that is not a quality which God can hear. God can only hear God. Like can only hear like. So that truth sense of prayer which she gives is that it is not a theological sense of prayer where we just try through words or through outward worship or through dogmas or habitual pleading, so daily pleading and so on, that we cannot pray with God. But that she shows then through seven stages how only the divine in us is that which can commune with God. So that if we want to pray, that we only pray with the divine in us. Naturally, she shows that through seven times seven steps. But we won't go into that. By the way, the book I wrote on the textbook only gives the rough outline of the structure of each chapter. Say on the chapter on prayer, just very roughly those seven steps which lead to communion with God. Not the subtones, the more expansive sense of the first eight chapters are on tapes, on I don't know how many dozen tapes, where I have shown that step by step. So here you only want to get the structural sense, the big sense, because as I said right at the beginning of these talks, I want you to show the methodology of self-instruction, self-teaching, so that you can teach yourself. So can you see how here in prayer she appeals, so to say, to the divine nature in us and says that divine nature in us can approach God, can commune with God. Then comes Atonement and Eucharist, the next chapter, and says, that's all right what you do in prayer, but, it's as if she would call in the but, are you willing to give up all that is wrong? Or are you trying to demand from God something and you yourself are not willing to lay down the mortal? And so Atonement and Eucharist comes in and has that wonderful Christ touch, where I have summarized it, only by letting go of all that is God unlike can we have at one moment with God. So you see, prayer says we can commune with God by God-like qualities, but the Christ says, but then you have to give up the ungodlike qualities. Are you willing, you see, to give up, to drink the cup and to eat the bread? Are you willing to take up the cross or not? Or do you only want what you like? So Atonement and Eucharist is really that big chapter, that crucial chapter in our life, where it says, are you willing to pay the price for it? I always feel that so many students, whatever they study, they can study the whole textbook, they can study the whole matrix, they can study every book and say, it's wonderful. They are still at the point of prayer at that point. Whatever they study, no matter if they study whole matrices, they are always inwardly still at the point of prayer, where they say, yes, my consciousness wants to be attuned with the divine consciousness so that it is at one. But then comes the crucial point, are we willing to let go of everything that stands in that way? Are we willing to give up our hobbies or our pet things, or are we willing to be ridiculed? Are we willing to lose all our friends, all our church friends? Are we willing to be ridiculed before the world? Do I pay that price or not? See, this textbook is a living textbook. I call it the way of life because it's a living textbook. And there usually is the point where they say, yes, but I would like really to go to this talk, or I would like to attend this thing, but you know, my aunt is coming and she wouldn't like me to be away, or you know, so and so and so. How did the Christians put up Christianity on the feet? How did they do it? By going to the catacombs, by being willing to be thrown before the lions. They really put everything into it. And I can't see how one can be a student of Christian Science and not accept that second chapter, Atonement and Eucharist. I just can't. It's all blah blah until one accepts Atonement and Eucharist. And I always say to everyone who loves to see this and says, oh, this is all, I say, all right, but first go and read Atonement and Eucharist and ask yourself honestly, are you willing or aren't you willing? The Christian Scientists read that chapter with great admiration, how Jesus was willing to lay down the mortal, how he was willing to be crucified, how these bad boys at the ecclesiastical authority and the political authority were such bad boys and gave him a hell of a life, say, well, he did it. What about us? This is a chapter for us. Are we going and take up the cross and drink the cup? Or else nothing can unfold. This is the order of being. The Christian Science textbook is not just a nice book. It's an ordered way of life. absolute, the ordered way of life. Of life. Where we can't just stay at the point of prayer. Most people just would like at the point of prayer because that's so easy, you know. You just pray to God Almighty, and He's so good. And that's such a wonderful feeling. But Mrs. Eddy doesn't close her textbook with the chapter on prayer. That's only the first chapter. Then comes the second. Then comes, really, Last Supper. See the Last Supper, then comes Gethsemane, and the whole second chapter is all about that. It's all about showing that at a second step, the Christ comes to us and says, all that which is not in accordance with your prayer has to disappear, has to give way. You can't play politics in science. You can't play on both sides in science. There is a definite line of demarcation. So the atonement is only possible through at-one-ment. The fact about being is that we are at one mind, at one ment, at one mentality, at one mind, that we have the mind of Christ, and only that mind of Christ atones us. Because there we are willing to let the Christ power overcome every error at every point. But as she says, the divine, in that chapter she says, the divine must overcome the human at every point. There is no more playing politics there. So, let's see that this chapter, Atonement and Eucharist, which is all about, more or less about Jesus and Jesus and Jesus and Jesus, is only an exemplification of our life. Neither an exemplification or not a presentation of Jesus' life. She starts right in and says, Atonement is the exemplification of man's unity with God, not of Jesus' unity with God. Of man's unity with God, whereby man reflects divine truth, life, and love, and then shows how we have to give up all false beliefs, that we have really to stand to our conviction. How many people tell me, oh, I know, I couldn't give up the church. That's nice, I have nothing against it, but then they say, comma, and then they give the reason. I have so many friends there. Well, is the church a structure of truth and love, or is the church a social institution for having friends? That's a crucial question. And if it is just a social institution for having friends, then the movement must go down, as it does. Goes down from the peak of 1945 of 11,200 journal practitioners to 6,200 today. Nearly 50% within 25 years. It goes down from a church attendance from 100% to about 30% in every church. Well, why does it go down? It has to go down. Because the church doesn't accept the second chapter in the textbook? Not at all. It's all about putting up personality and about sustaining personality and admiring personality. It's always with interest. Nobody thinks to give up everything for the idea, no matter what it costs. No matter what it costs. I had $20 in my pocket and I gave up my job for science. $20. And no church as a background. Only a church as fighting me with $20 in my pocket. It needs more than an academic training to stand for that. Believe me. It needs something more. It needs the whole structure of the textbook. Actually, Then, when one has done that, then comes marriage. Then that approach to God, once one has been somehow purified and got rid of all the burdens of mortal mind and then we come to the point of marriage. I have put here down in marriage, being inwardly wedded to God, we are also wedded to all men and thus demonstrate a higher sense of humanhood. See, only then, when that purification has happened within oneself in atonement and Eucharist, then the higher sense of manhood, the improved sense of manhood is coming to life, and we are not only wedded to God, but we are wedded to the universe, because God is the sum total of the universe. Can you see, every time these last few days, when we came to the Christianity tone, I always could see that God, the definition of God, so to say, as the sum total of the universe. Here, God is not God up there, but he is the whole of the universe. And so gives the universal sense, a Christianity sense, and that's what happens, that we get wedded to each one, to each idea. That's the true marriage. In the chapter marriage, it doesn't say much about wife and women, it doesn't say much about if we should have children or not have children, if it's good for a Christian scientist to have children or not to have children, all these she practically doesn't touch. All what she teaches is that in the measure as we are one with God, we are one with God's universe. The whole universe. But we are wedded to the whole universe. And in that way, bring out a universal sense of manhood, which is a higher sense of humanhood. Then she goes further to that enormous chapter on Christian Science versus Spiritualism. I don't know what your experience is with this chapter in general. I don't know if people come to you and say, oh, that chapter on spiritualism, I don't like it, or I don't treat it. I don't believe in spiritualism anyway. So that's done, that chapter. I think spiritualism is anyway just rubbish, and so why should I read it? I'm not interested in it. I'm not a spiritualist. Everyone is a spiritualist. I wouldn't know any in here who is not a spiritualist, including myself. We are all spiritualists until we see that there is only one spirit and one spiritual universe. And as long as we still think of people as we do, and of me and you as we do, we are spiritualists. We believe that spirit is in a corporeal person. If we wouldn't believe that, we wouldn't talk anymore about people. What a wonderful life we would have. Get rid of that whole people universe. Spiritualism is the belief that spirit and matter mingle. It's the belief that spirit and matter must mingle in order to be true. That's why we are so much spiritualists at the moment. We lose somebody, we lose our parents or a child or anything. We are very sorry and we are very downcast. Why? Because we believe spirit is in matter. And so that if that matter doesn't anymore move and there is no more spirit in it, we are very, very sorry about it, because we are spiritualists. If we were not spiritualists, as Mrs. Eddy shows it here, where spirit is life and life is spirit, then we wouldn't in the first place think that the person is a material abode for spirit, and if somebody would pass on, we wouldn't be so downcast, because we would know that that hasn't changed, that doesn't change anything in regard to life in and of spirit. In that chapter, which is one of the purest chapters, so to say, up to now, there is such a clarity and a purity which shines through that fourth chapter. When we would reach that, then we really would come to the point of spiritual monism, where we just will see that there is just spirit and all is spiritual. then we would have really reached the climax, so to say, of our approach to God. Then we would commune with Spirit as spiritual being. What did I say here in Christian Science versus Spiritualism? I said, through spiritual understanding we are immersed into Spirit's self-communion. You know, into Spirit's self-communion, where she says so nicely that Spirit only communes through spiritual sense. Where we can see that all material things, all material places, all material happenings are not reality. It's that chapter in which Mrs. Eddy says, evil is neither place, person, or thing. That's the first time she defines evil. But it is neither place, neither person, place, or thing. Those three in some, doesn't matter in which they are. You can see, here she begins to see right through. Here everything becomes completely transparent. There is no more God and men approaching God. Here they have immersed into the one Spirit, into the infinite one Spirit. That's how the chapter starts, with that infinite one Spirit. Can you see that somehow through prayer, atonement, and marriage, through these first three, we still feel somehow a human element. It is still somebody who says, how shall I pray? What shall I mobilize within my consciousness which can commune with God? And it's atonement and Eucharist which says, and I jolly well have to lay down all that is God unlike, in order that nothing stands in the way of God. Marriage also has still that human element which says, and if I fulfill step by step atonement, then a higher humanhood is being brought out. In that chapter, it's all about humanhood. Only right at the end she asks, is man spiritual? Only then at the end, and then she leaves it and goes over to the last chapter of Spiritualism, where she shows that all is Spirit, that God is Spirit, that the Christ communes a spiritual sense, that man is spiritual, and that there is a spiritual sign and therefore spiritual understanding. All is Spirit. All four, you see, the world, Christ, Christianity, and Science is all Spirit now. And that's the transparency of Spirit, where everything is completely transparent, nothing stands anymore in the way. And we have reached the climax of spiritual oneness. Yes. Does that make some rhythmic sense, an ordered sense? See? You see, all these things answer the most fundamental questions in our life. For instance, the chapter marriage. Even if we take the chapter marriage in its real, bigger sense, namely that man is wedded to the whole universe, that by being one with God, we are one with the whole universe, it's something that we all would like. Everywhere is that desire of unity among us, of unity among the world, of unity among the family, unity among the nations, and so on. And can we start there? Can we start with working out that unity? Except we start with prayer. With prayer which says, first of all, I must have a pure sense of God. All that what is in me and moves in me and is awake in me must have the nature of God first. Then it must come to atonement and Eucharist and says, then I jolly well first have to put myself right before I can be right with the universe. I jolly well have to be willing to lay down my human will. That's the first subject he has. I jolly well have to be willing to lay down my material concept of things. That's the second. I jolly well have to lay down my selfish sense of things. That's the third. In the fourth he said, I jolly well have to lay down an organizational sense of things. Then in the fifth, I jolly well have to lay down a mortal sense of things. And then in the sixth, erroneous consciousness. And then finally it blossoms out in the seventh subject there and says, then you are in the plane of love. Then things will come, will happen right. So can you see, we cannot work out marriage by studying the chapter on marriage. Marriage is the outcome. Christianity is the outcome of the Christ idea of Atonement and Eucharist, and Atonement and Eucharist finds its power in prayer, because prayer is that power which helps us to lay down the mortal. And in doing so, really, we find finally a sense of the fourth of a chapter on spiritualism, where we say, after all, that unity in the world is very nice and so on, but I have to see right through that thing and see that finally and actually only that which is spirit, infinite spirit, as the only spirit, as the only substance, is the thing that matters. Then we rise, so to say, above the world. We may be still in the world, but not from the world. We rise above the world spiritually into a completely new dimension of consciousness. Then we are one with God. Can you see the approach to God?